Now look what we have here before us. We've got the
Smarty Hotties
sitting next to
Vanamont.
We've got
Curt and St. George, a.k.a. Dirt McGirt.
Right by
Amy Bowen.
Nobody is wasting nobody. That is
deadpan.
And
deadpan
is the way things ought to be. You're standing right now with 9 delegates from 100
podcasts.
And there's over 100 more. That's 20,000 hardcore
deadpanites.
40,000 counting affiliates. And 20,000 more not organized, but ready to fight. 60,000
deadpanites.
Now there ain't but 20,000 police in the whole town. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 124. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, and I own 3 coffee mugs with my name on them.
Welcome to lesson 110 of Learn Something New, 365 lessons that teach you something new every day. Today we will learn how to create a cyborg. Step 1. Engineer a near-death calamity. Popular death-defying scenarios include malfunctioning aerospace vehicles, car wrecks, and drunk karaoke showdowns. Step 2. Make sure to replace the following items. Arms, legs, major internal organs. Please avoid replacing naughty bits with cybernetic replacements unless your cyborg is intending for a career in the adult entertainment industry or Capitol Hill. And finally, step 3. In replacing body parts, make certain the face is left intact in order to make that human connection. If your cyborg is in law enforcement, though, make sure your cyborg has a cool visor to wear across the eyes. To find out more about pimping out your mortal coil, subscribe to the cyberpunk novel Cybrosis at Cybrosis Novel, that's Cybrosis novel.com. This concludes Lesson 110, How to Create a Cyborg. See you tomorrow for Lesson 111, Flip Turns for Novice Swimmers.
Hey, this is Dubshack from the Farpoint Recap, and you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan. Deadpan is the motherfucking way. And I'm not just saying that because I have an unhealthy obsession with Jack Mangan. Or his rock-hard abs of steel.
Hello, Pam. This is Amy Bowen again. I'm calling because I want to share a non-Watchmen-related dumbass memory that's now only a couple of hours old. I was at a party with some of my friends tonight, and somebody asked, I don't know exactly how it came up, but somebody asked, what's the capital of Canada? Nobody knew. We were all like, Alberta? Ontario? Finally, somebody pointed out, hey, you have a BlackBerry. I'm omitting names. You have a BlackBerry. Google it and look it up. And he finally did. And we all went, Ottawa? I never would have guessed that. So I think everybody probably felt pretty dumb, including me. I apologies to our Canadian friends. I thought you might get a kick out of that. Okay. Talk to you later. Bye.
It's time to get motivated. Look at the posters and the cheap frames on the walls around your office and get psyched. The ridge climber, clinging onto a bare rock face thousands of feet up, is surely thinking. Determination. What a perfectly inapplicable metaphor my death-defying climb is for a bunch of cubicle dwellers at a tech support call center. or the muscular, bronze-skinned runner in the desert is thinking, this must be what it feels like for software programmers who will work all weekend to meet some arbitrary code freeze date. The guy at that helm of that boat fighting its way through rough seas is thinking, boy, I sure hope someone snaps a picture of this and some clueless paper-pushing CEO hangs it up in her office hallways to make herself feel like she's a daring sea captain, risking her life and leading her crew through dangerous waters. A flock of geese in a V formation have proven capable of such disciplined teamwork that really, the company's whole sales division should be sacked and replaced with those birds, as long as they can get work visas from Canada. And that bird in front needs his own poster and inane saying in celebration of his leadership. Just like 18-year-old Jason, who has the keys to open your cash register at CVS, if you need to accept a customer's personal check. Let's put a picture of a lion over the word integrity, because nothing speaks more of integrity than a predator on the African plains. Although it is a pretty perfect metaphor for how most CEOs view their staff. Certainly for CEOs who would hang up a stupid poster like this. And those skydivers in a ring formation are displaying courage, risking their lives in the name of a transcendent thrill, just like you are, while you're looking at this poster, pouring cheap Folgers coffee into a foam cup in the company break room.
Yeah, what's in it? You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan. Deadpan is the way.
So if I were to look at Alan Moore's, for me, my favorite of Alan Moore's, and I'm the first one to say I'm the closet comic book geek. I don't know all the artists at a glance. I'm not tracking with any current series right now. I'd love to, but unfortunately, I backed the wrong horse. There was there were two series that came out from a company called Cross Gen Comics. And I really got into two of their franchises, and then CrossGen went belly up. And I actually had this conversation with Jared Axelrod. And if you ever want to get a guy who knows his comics, man, that Axelrod, he's got game. I mean, unbelievable. But again, going back to Alan Moore, I went to go see on the big screen The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And I actually got into a debate on Twitter about this with the comic book goddess. You know, a lot of people argue that League was a horrible film. And I personally didn't think so. I found it to be a very entertaining film. Did Tom Sawyer annoy me? Yeah. I really wish they hadn't added that. And for that, I can sort of see why Alan Moore was a bit miffed. You know, they didn't, you know, they were saying, well, we're trying to appeal to the younger demographic. I was like, look, you don't have to appeal to the younger demographic. You got Sean freaking Connery as an old Alan Quartermain. So, you know, dude, you're fine. But I could actually overlook the Tom Sawyer. I could overlook that one bit because I was enjoying everything else so much. I was having a really good time with it. So I instantly ran out and I bought Alan Moore's original. I bought Alan Moore's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and I was very disappointed. I found it weak, and I found it to be a little more like Alan Moore was just working through his personal, you know, thing. I mean, I'm sorry, when a finishing girl school looks like a giant butt sticking up in the air. And you know the headmistress is a dominatrix, and it was just getting a little too. I was like, you know, Alan, the meds ain't working, bro. I just that was a little. So I put that at the bottom. I love the concept. I absolutely adore the concept. Yes. But when he was making what, you know, I'm sorry, Alan Quartermain strung out in an opium den, not my Alan Quartermain. My Alan Quartermain did exactly what they did in the movie. In the movie, Quartermain had a bunch of guys at the Adventurers Club play him, and then he just hung out in the back. And what did he do? He retired in Africa. That's what Alan Quartermain would do. That's what my Alan Quartermain would do. So, yeah, the opium den thing that didn't fly with me. So, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, bottom of the list.
Well, I didn't read the book, but so you're saying League, that is below Watchmen. Watchmen is better.
Yes.
And now, on the T. Morris rating scale, League is below. Okay.
League is below Watchmen. Now here's where your listeners are gonna get pissed at me. Watchmen's above it. So Watchmen's at number three. Now, why is Watchmen at number three?
Boo. Watchmen.
Yeah, boo, boo. You naughty, naughty man. Watchmen is at number three because I loved it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. but the biggest issue I have with it is it feels very dated. It feels extremely and utterly dated. And you know, it's not that it evokes these emotions that I wish to forget, because I was one of the kids of the Cold War. You know, I was one of those kids that, you know, was I didn't want to watch The Day After when it originally aired on television because I was too scared. I remember going to see War Games and, you know, not falling asleep. And I remember Roger Waters' album, Radio Chaos.
Yes.
I have that. I have that on CD. And the funny thing is that you can watch War Games and you can watch and you can listen to Radio Chaos. And it doesn't really sound dated.
War Games is. I've actually watched War Games. I'm sorry, I got to jump in. War Games. I watched right before we did the Watchmania discussion to try to kind of get myself psyched up for the discussion. And it was definitely fun to watch again. You know, it was fun to watch this movie again. But it definitely.
Well, I'm not saying the technology isn't dated. Oh, the technology is horrifically dated. I mean, heck, you could rent the movie Hackers, and when Angelina Jolie is talking about her brand new laptop. And she goes, yeah, I really tricked it out. It's got a 14-inch screen. It's got a 28.8 baud modem, and it's got a processor speed of 200 megahertz. And I remember Johnny Lee Hooker looks at Angelina Jolie, super hackers, you know, facing off, and he goes, "Can you handle that much machine?" And I am howling with laughter. But I mean, but it doesn't feel dated. But Watchmen, when I reread it, when Thomas loaned it to me, I reread it. And I was like, this is going to be rough. You know, I mean, visually it looks like Zack Snyder nailed it. Visually, Zack Snyder nailed it. but I just didn't feel like, I don't think this movie is going to resonate with people that are not comic book geeks or have not read Watchmen previously.
Well, actually, the movie's out, so as people are listening to this, they
probably... Oh, yeah, that's true.
The jury is in. So
that's true.
But you know, it's true that during the preview, everyone I know who has not read the book just looks at it and says, oh, it's just another one of those superhero movies. And they don't know, you know, what Watchmen truly is. But now I'm going to jump in real quick about the dated thing, is that I think, you know, you take something like... You're right. I mean, Watchmen is absolutely of its time. But, you know, you take something like... And here's, you know, where I'm going to try to seem smarmy. You take something like Bonfire of the Vanities, or, you know, what a brilliant book that was. But it was all about, when you read that, it's absolutely written in the 80s and of the 80s. And it's an absolutely, it's a snapshot of the time. Or something like a movie like Taxi Driver, an absolute snapshot of the 70s. And it's, you know, an unapologetic snapshot of the 70s. Or even going back a little further, you go back to The French Connection. These movies are so, they're just dripping with their time. And I think that's a good thing. You're right that there are times when it's painful. You know, like if you go back and watch even some of the John Hughes movies and whatnot, it's a little painful. You know,
and I think that was the problem. It was I think that was my issue. I think that's my issue. It's not like it was trying to be nostalgic. You know, it's not like American Graffiti, or it's not like Apocalypse Now, where, you know, it's made 20 years or 10 years or however many years afterwards, and it looks back, you know, with a sense of nostalgia. I mean, I didn't feel that in Watchmen, but I just felt like that one of the things that I love about comic books in general is that they're timeless, or they can be timeless. You get the right story, you get the right characters, you get it all together, and they can be timeless. Like even the stuff that Gaiman wrote in the Sandman years, it's timeless. Now, but that's my only fear about Watchmen, is that it's going to be really, really dated. And even some of the preliminary reviews that I've read, you know, at the recording of this, you know, it just feels, you know, a lot of people are saying that, yeah, you know, it feels like we're stepping back to the days of the Cold War. And, you know,
it just doesn't carry over. Now it should, because you know we're in it. We're still in the Cold War, but it's a different kind of Cold War.
Piezo Domine.
Man's dead is the way.
You know, the more I listen to that discussion with T. Whoa, peeking. You know, the more I listen to that discussion with T. Morris, the more I appreciate it, the more I like it. And there's actually plenty more to come. We get into the rest of his top five favorite graphic novels of all time. But I've jumped in here now to announce that we've come to an end on one of our deadpan journeys. It's time for the dramatic conclusion to the epic tale, the epic recounting of the Energizer Bunny's basket.
And a little, what is this? Oh, a little keychain pen. Some fisherman's friends. Some visine that is dated. I don't think it's even ever been opened. Never been open. Oh, it expires in 2009, June 2009, so it can still be used. Keys to my mother's place, because my mother is insane and sends them to me every year thinking she's going to die. Little, I don't know what half this stuff is, little charms and junk like that. And that's about it for the contents of my basket. Most of it will end up getting tossed or put away properly. And until next time, bye.
The Questers from FPM. A Serial by Amy Bowen. Episode 4. The Centaur Court.
And the gate is closed. Ralph didn't say the gate would be closed,
commented an annoyed Joe. He and his companions were now standing in front of a pair of 10-foot-high, ornate, rectangular, wrought-iron gates, which were bolted and locked shut. Through the gates, they could see and hear the busy marketplace inside. The gates were set into a stone wall, and there was, just as Ralph had said, a stone statue of a centaur on top of the wall directly above the gates. Between the top of the gates and the centaur's feet, the words, "The Centaur Court," were engraved in the wall.
How are we supposed to get in there?
Wondered Jeremy. There must be a password on it, said Amy. She faced the gate, stood tall, and pronounced in a loud, clear voice, "Melon!" Nothing happened. Rhea rolled her eyes.
Does it say you're supposed to say that?
No, but I've always wanted to say that, and I thought it was worth a try. Wanderwolf stepped forward.
Open sesame?
He tried. The gates remained closed. He growled and snarled at them in wolfish, but they didn't seem to understand that either.
Let me try something. Aloe Amora.
Rhea proceeded to try several of the incantations she knew, but none of them worked.
How does this place get any business if no one can get into it?
Asked John.
These gates are only open for the dead, not the living.
John immediately recognized that the voice had come from above him.
Who said that? Is there someone up there?
He looked up to the top of the wall.
John, you're going weird again. There's no one up there.
There must be. Someone just said that these gates are only open for the dead.
I didn't hear it.
I said that.
John saw that the statue of the centaur was, indeed, speaking.
I am Oaken the Centaur. How is it that you can hear me? Are you a wizard?
No, I'm just a bard. I don't know how... Can't any of you guys hear the centaur talking?
No.
Me neither.
The others all confirmed that they heard nothing.
This is really weird.
There must be an explanation. If you are not a wizard, have you been experimenting with any powerful magic lately?
I read a little bit of the Tome of the Sophia Pulchra last night. It was amazing.
The centaur looked surprised.
You, a human, presume to read from that tomb? Was it not one of your kind who said that all you needed to know was that beauty is truth, and truth beauty? I would have expected a fellow poet such as you to heed that wisdom.
The poem to which you refer was inspired by a mere man-made art object. The tome of the Sophiapolcra had much more power to seduce and enthrall. I just couldn't resist my own desire to know what was in it. They told us afterwards that the book has a mind of its own and usually chooses someone to read from it, so it's not really my fault.
Well, what's done is done. However it happened, we can speak to each other now. Why do you seek to enter the Centaur Court?
We need to buy some of the garlic salt of the underworld. We got infected with undead microbes yesterday, long story, and if we don't eat some of that garlic salt, the microbes will take us over and turn us into zombies. We're on an important quest to maintain the harmony between our kingdom and one of our allies, and we'd really prefer to return home alive. Could you please let us inside, just for long enough for us to find some garlic salt?
All right. Since you have such an urgent need, you may enter.
Automatically, the lock opened, the bolt slid back, and the gate swung open. The bewildered questing party walked through.
So, I'm the only one who could hear the centaur talking, is that right?
That's right.
This must be your magic power. This morning, you and Andrea told us that after you recovered from last night, you'd eventually manifest a magic power of some kind. I think this is it.
Yes, I remember. So my magic power is talking to statues?
It looks that way. And it's a good power, too. That's a relief.
Yeah. Well, this is a surprise. It's not a bad surprise, though. I could get used to this power.
That's good to hear.
On with the search for the garlic salt.
Yeah, let's go. You have been listening to The Questers from FPN, a serial by Amy Bowen. Thanks to Justa Joe, Chris Kolish, Rhea aka The Energizer Bunny, Jack Hosley, Paul Mackey, and T. Morris for contributing their voices to this episode. The song heard in this episode was Journey's End by Guardian Mind Mix, available at the PodSafe Music Network. The sound effects in this episode were provided by the Freesound Project at freesound.org.
Oh my god. What happened to the pants? They're all dead. The pants are dead. I'm stuck with dead pants. Can anybody help me? Jack Mangan, can you help me? Deadpan. Deadpan Podcast. Host Jack Mangan. Yeah.
I'm hearing that waka waka sound in my nightmares.
Why, sure.
Why,
climb
sure.
Into my
climb
spoon.
Into my spoon. Climb into my spoon.
Climb into my spoon.
Climb into my spoon. Climb into mice? SB says, Jack Mangan's sex pan. Sex pan is the sway. Alright, yeah, maybe that one wasn't so random. Justa Joe says, 1. Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. 2. Peter Gabriel's So. 3. Pink Floyd, The Wall. 4. Joe Jackson, Look Sharp. 5. The Alan Parsons Project, Turn of a Friendly Card. Special mention goes to Rush, 2112. Billy Joel, The Stranger. Eric Clapton, Rush, Motion Picture Soundtrack. Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms. Heart Magazine, Michael Penn, March. Sam Phillips, Martinis and Bikinis. Extra Special Oh So Close Award. The Police, Zenyatta Mandana, Ghost in the Machine, and Synchronicity. The Smarty Hotties says, Try Not to Laugh, Peter Piper Picked a Pack of Pickled Pork Nipples. Vanamon says, Morning Pan, Gray, Gray, and More Gray. Still the gray has brought a coolness to the morning. And the last of the week, Ed from Texas says, what do the Swedes know from good television? What have they ever given us besides the chef? Bjork, Bjork, Bjork. Sorry, I am pause. Oh, peaking again. Sorry. I'm sitting... The microphone is, The microphone has its mood swings. Some days it picks me up. Some days I have to shout just to get a little bump in audacity. Anyway, we're going to go straight from peaking, This is Outro Babble. There's a lot of good content left over and that's still to come on Deadpan, including something from SB with a file name called FB Slut. So that if that doesn't get you to come back for the next Deadpan episode, I don't know what will. But there's also more stuff, but I also need your contribution. And you can voicemail that in, 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664, or email me, sphericaljackm@gmail.com. Don't forget the M. All right, this is not even that late, and the usual outro babble fatigue has finally hit me and brought on the rambling. So let me do some keyboard clicks and bring up something sensible. So we can go out on something. Lots of keyboard clicks. Okay, I'm going to leave us off with, before the music, with a bit of advice. You should always exercise extreme caution with close people who frequently use the word whatever at you. Because after all, the word hate is embedded right there in the middle of whatever. Deadpan is the motherfucking way. Thank you for listening to 124. If you don't come back for number 125, I don't blame you, but hopefully you will. And I'm going to go select our musical offering for the end of this episode. It will probably be one of the mashup projects that I've done in the past. I'll choose a good one. So thank you for listening. You rock. The Deadpan community rocks. And I'll see you in the comments page. We actually approached 500 last week, which is cool. It's always good to see those numbers up there. Deadpan out.